Welcome to episode 179 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat footy, stats, and the growth of datatainment with Champion Data's Tim Kelsey.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who is designing his next pair of Sports Geek shoes, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to Sports Geek. And yes, it is about time for me to order a new pair of Sports Geek shoes. You can follow Sports Geek Shoes on Twitter. It helps me keep my sneakers tax deductible. I've currently got 9 pairs of Sports Geek tagged runners, 4 of them at Adidas and 5 of them at Nike, I think. So it is getting a little bit out of control, but it's all part of the brand Sports Geek. So, as always, you can contact me via various means. Email is sean@sportsgeekhq.com or at Sean Callanan on most social media platforms. And I'm always asking, how can I help you? How can I help you, the listener? Is there a way that Sports Geek can work with you, your team, your brand, your league? The simple thing to do is either send an email or even just reach out and book a time for a phone call. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. This week's guest, Tim Kelsey, is from Champion Data. For those of you who don't know about Champion Data, for those of you who are outside of Australia, Champion Data is one of the leading sports statistics and data analysis firms working heavily in the AFL, Australian Rules Football, but they also cover netball, rugby, the NRL, rugby league, and soccer. So it's a really interesting story to sort of see where statistics and the development of statistics, the capture of statistics, analysis around that has changed in the world of football. And where it's going. So I hope you enjoy my chat with Tim Kelsey from Champion Data. Very happy to be down here at the offices of Champion Data down at South Bank here in Victoria, Melbourne. Welcome to the podcast, Tim Kelsey.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Very happy to be here. What I wanted to get a bit of background, so the people who are in Melbourne, being an AFL-dominated city, they would know Champion Data. It's flying past them in all kinds of print media, all from afl.com.au. They would know the Champion Data story. But for the international listeners, those in the US and in Europe, can you tell us a little bit about what Champion Data do and sort of how it got its beginnings?
Sure. So Champion Data originally started back in 1995 by a guy named Ted Hopkins, who was famous for kicking 4 goals in the second half of a grand final.
All right, that's it. You've lost me already. For the people who don't know, Ted Hopkins is a famous Carlton footballer.
Yep.
They defeated Collingwood. And what Tim obviously does not know, that I'm a Collingwood man. So you've lost me, already. So Ted went from an AFL footballer to a statistician.
Well, he actually had an interim role as a publisher, and then he ended up with hatching the idea of using a computer to capture sports statistics.
Who would have thought? A computer?
Yeah, 1995. But what he actually wanted to do when he came up with the idea, he was looking at capturing qualitative information. So rather than just capturing a kick and counting kicks, he came up with the idea of counting effective and ineffective kicks, so putting a qualitative element on it. So possession became contested and uncontested, and that was the thing that grabbed the attention of the coaches. So initially he had the interest of Dennis Pagan, who used the data to win a grand final in, I think it was 95 or 96.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the business grew from then. In 1998, it became part of a joint venture with News Corporation, the AFL, and Champion Data to provide data for a property called AFL.com for the first time.
And so, I mean, it literally was, again, very much on the performance side first, because it was Dennis Pagan and coaches, they're always looking for that edge.
Yep.
And, you know, Ted's going, oh, here's some stats, and if
you know, for the, again, for the international listeners, it's, you know, possessions, contested and uncontested. So it's a little bit more nuanced than, you know, if you're looking at basketball of just shots made and shots missed, it was, you know, where they contested shots, those kind of things.
Yes.
And yeah, because they had success, you know, everyone follows a successful team. So you would have had wide adoption amongst the clubs to say, well, we want these stats as well.
Correct. So the adoption really came by getting engagement with clubs and having coaches talk about it in press conferences and then broadcasters and publishers saying, what the hell are they talking about? We need to find out. And then they came knocking on our door and then that opened up the opportunity to deliver the same service to the broadcasters. And you might remember there was a show called The Football Show that had Eddie Maguire and Sam Newman.
Yep.
Now, they used to do a bit of shtick on it as well. Like Eddie would talk about hardball gets and Sammy Newman would joke about what the hell's a hardball get.
Yeah.
But that was all part of a plan to get penetration in fans but also in media. So Eddie Maguire, as a commentator, his one of his points of differences was to be well-studied in the numbers as opposed to someone who's a former great of the game. So that, there was a whole lot of things that helped us along the way, but the underpinning of it was always that we had the clubs engaged at the high performance level and we had media and fans wanting to know what the coaches knew.
So was this start of that, you know, what's now termed, wouldn't have been a term then, but that data-tainment type piece where it's sort of saying, well, here's a different way to look at it.
Yep.
We're now going to educate the fans. The fans are now going to look at the game differently. They're going to grade players differently. They're not going to just say, oh, he got 20 kicks. If he got 15 kicks that were contested, then we're going to value him more and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So one of the really early things was effective kicking had a really high correlation with winning. So we were always looking at correlations with winning. It was really important that we were evidence and research based. And long kicking, back in those days, if you were an effective long kicking team, you were winning most of the games. So they were really important metrics. And it was trying to educate the fans on those metrics and you know, they sort of started to become a bit complicated to explain to them. So there was a really long process of getting them to buy in and understand it. It's sort of second nature now, but the process took a lot longer then. The climate was very different and you're right, it did become a bit data-tainment.
Yeah.
But that was probably in the mid-2000s that started to happen, particularly when the broadcast rights got busted up.
Yep.
So it had been with Channel 7 and then it sort of fragmented into 9, 10 and Fox, and we sort of had tension and competition in that market and broadcasters wanting to create points of difference, and that really helped the business as well. So that's sort of how it evolved.
And so off that first iteration and coming up with different views of the statistics and I think I did see a really good video, a Vice video of the way, and I'll put it in the show notes, of the way that your callers and coders, you know, record a game.
Yes.
Is that a process that's evolved over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think people, it's a really good trivia question to ask people, how do you think we do it? And they come up with all sorts of crazy ideas, like one person captures one team, or one captures forwards and one captures back. But essentially it's a caller and a keyboarder. And the trick is to train the callers to call in a certain way, but to also to build the capture tool to the rules of the game. So if you take possession of the ball, instead of having 200 buttons to click, there's only sort of four or five. There's only four or five logical things that will happen next. And that's why that building that platform then allows you to capture an enormous amount of information. And then over the years, we've just added on to that. So from that sort of main capture of the game, we've added on things like interchange, or rotations. We've added in location of the ball on the ground. We've integrated in XY coordinates. We've integrated in pressure, which is we've done in the last sort of 4 or 5 years. A lot of people don't think you can define pressure, but we've done a pretty good job with it. Again, you're always looking at correlations with success and winning.
Yep.
And that's kind of in those numbers. So that's why we feel like they're okay. And there's a lot of consultation with the clubs around defining, you know, what's direct pressure and what's indirect pressure and that sort of thing. Now, all of those feeds now get integrated together in the platform. So, you know, what was a four-person thing 15 years ago is about 10 now.
Yep.
Yeah. And obviously the thing that we're now looking at is, it, you know, in time it's probably going to go back the other way with automation. Yeah.
And yeah, so that's the piece of now being able to potentially either analyze it via the video, the commentators, those kind of things, to be able to say what of those 10 events or what of those things can be automated.
Yes. And you know, I listened to your the recent podcast you had
With Aviv.
Yeah, with Aviv, and you know, a lot of the themes that he's talking about, you know, resonate for us, and that is in that machine learning space, the two areas that there's been an enormous amount of research in is in, you know, video recognition and audio recognition. So it will happen. It's just a matter of when it happens and how it happens. And the solutions are sort of have application across so many different things that it's, you know, you're in that dilemma of whether you try and solve it yourself or wait and see whether others can solve it for you, and whether it becomes a platform that you can adopt, or whether you have to build your own platform. But that's certainly where we're sort of going and looking.
And so, you know, from early on, was it simply, you know, you were producing the stats and the Dennis Pagans would be getting the piece of paper at the end of the game and they'd be looking over it and see why, you know, why they won or why they lost. And now you're moving to more real-time data that the coaches are, you know, seeing live. You know, they're looking at an iPad or looking at, they're getting a printout that's just happened right there and then as they're walking down. Is it those real-time decision-making on this data is something that's paramount now?
Well, it's really interesting you ask that. So also in 1995, one of the principles was that everything had to be live.
Yep.
So we've actually been live since 95. So in 1998, we actually had computers in coaches' box getting live data feeds, doing printouts at quarter time. So I guess the evolution for us is that it's deeper and it's faster, but it also has been, you know, automated to the point where some clubs are using tablets and that type of thing. You've got just some venues connectivity issues with that sort of stuff, but most of it can be automated. A lot of them still coaches like hard copy printouts, and you'll see a lot of them run down with those. But it has been live almost since day one.
Yep. Yeah. And is there there's the capture of the data, but then there's the analysis that you do over the top of that.
Yep.
Where does that happen in your infrastructure?
Yep. So it happens in a few ways. In the live game, we've built a couple of software applications. One's what you call a piece of software that you can interrogate the game, and the other one's just an alert system, which is really just throwing up KPIs that are in red, green or amber, and they're set to the states that the club wants them to sort of flag areas where they think they're sort of going okay or not going okay. And then the other parts of it are obviously that, and we did this really, really early, everything's linked to vision. So everything's got a time code and linked to vision, and that's been happening since 99 as well. And then post-game there's a whole lot of analysis that goes on in other tools that collate data from all games. All clubs get all data, which is a bit unusual. In a lot of the other major sports, there's not the sharing of data. So we're capturing all games and providing all the information to each of the clubs.
So it's effectively up to the clubs to analyse, make their own, you know, assessment, have their own focus, whether it's, you know, we want to be better at contested or we want to be better at ball movement or we want to be better at using different parts of the ground. They've all got the same data, but they're, I guess, analysing it and using it in their own manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen, you know, some, you know, significant changes in the evolution of the game. I think I mentioned earlier about effective kicking and long kicking. That change with Mark Williams at Port Adelaide, he started to play play a possession type game, which sort of meant that we need to think harder about what we were doing. And then, of course, you know, the Richmond win this year again is a change that we've sort of seen coming, which is really the complexity and difficulty of transitioning the ball from one end of the ground to the other. That's the thing that started to change significantly in the last few years. It's just got harder and harder.
Yep.
If you get the ball up your end, it's significantly harder to get it back up the other end.
And so is it a bit the coaches trying to keep in front of the analysis to a certain degree, like finding a gap and then exploiting it, so to speak?
Wish I knew.
Yeah, and then Do you and your team then go back and look at how can we see these trends or better analyze these trends or better report on what's happening here, because it might be something that's not being recorded or being pushed out?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really good question. I think I guess the best example of it is the recent capturing of pressure. That was really off the back of one of the clubs being quite interested in whether we could do it, and everyone wanting to try and work out a metric for pressure because they thought it was so important. And it's, you know, it was quoted ad nauseum in 17. But I think, to be frank, the clubs are ahead of us. We're sort of chasing their tail a bit in terms of trying to understand what they're doing and whether there's gaps in what we're capturing. And, you know, there's some really, really interesting conversations of things that we simply don't know how to capture. I mean, one of the coaches we've had in is absolutely adamant that a player won't play well without emotional stimulation. So how do we capture whether they've been emotionally stimulated? I don't actually know. But, yep, like, that's sort of, we're sitting there going, okay, well, we've got to think about those sorts of things and how we might do it and what technologies around that might help us with that. And the more obvious one right now is the GPS data that we've got our hands on. And when we're not so much interested in it from that performance point of view, that's not our expertise. We're more interested in the integration of that in match data and looking at structures and game geometry and those sorts of things.
So stuff like the GPS or any biometric stuff, are you sort of trying to take some of that data and then map it to match performance?
Match performance and synchronize with match stats.
Yep.
So some really basic things is like, you know, how hard are you working when you're in possession of the ball versus when you're not in possession of the ball? You know, you'd be surprised what results you get from that. But even more basic things like if you correlate, say, ratings or a ratings product that we've got with distance run, we've sort of found that for the 11 players at the bottom that travel the least amount of distance per game are Brownlow medalists.
Yep.
So it's actually not all about how far you can run. It's how
you can't. It's a bit hard to measure knowing to run to the right place.
So it's really some incredibly interesting stuff, and we've only just started. So it's really exciting to blend those. It'll be really exciting for us to blend those two data sets together. But of course, then the challenge becomes, how do we actually convey a message to the public and the fans that they can kind of understand? And it's sort of like starting again with some of this. It's like, you know, thinking a bit intelligently about meaningful names and descriptions of things, and how do we get that through? Because I think, you know, distance run and who's the fastest and that is really interesting because we can all kind of relate to that. But there's a lot of work to do in educating people more on, you know, how Richmond might have won the game and how it's difficult to transition the ball and how, you know, Rioli works the fat side because there's more space to cover and he can cover more space than the other two because he's actually a bit faster than the other two. It's really, really complicated and sophisticated now. So that's one of the challenges we've got.
Do you think things like the rise and the knowledge that fans now have of stats via fantasy and the fact that they're diving in on rankings points and effectively they're not looking at the traditional stuff of how many kicks and handballs. They're just saying, how many points did he get today? That's how kids are now growing up. They're going, oh, way to go. Cyril had, you know, 150 points.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that he's had six goals.
Yes, yes.
Do you think that's just changing the conversation, but then also changing the way that some fans are now looking at the game overall?
Yeah. Oh, look, I think it is. I think with those sorts of formulas and that, the thing that's really important is to get meaningful numbers. So like the rankings product that scores Supercoach, you can kind of know that if you've had a 100-point game, it's a good game. So it kind of resonates. We've had issues with things like pressure because it's sort of measured in decimal points.
Yeah.
And it's much harder for people to start to relate to that. You know, if you sort of say to them, you know, pressure factor of 4.7 or whatever, it doesn't mean as much. So we stumbled on the 100 points in rankings and we were a bit lucky with that. But there are a lot of people that like one number. But there's as many that'll spit in your eye and say, don't give me the one number, give me the detail.
Yeah.
And that's particularly, you know, the high performance coaches. Some of them like it. Some of them don't even know. Some of them will use a formula and not actually know how it works. So long as you can convince them that it correlates with winning, they're on board. But in that fantasy space, there's definitely, I think, an interest in, you know, just the number and not necessarily always the breakdown of the numbers. But the trick is to try and meet all parts of the market, those that don't want it and those that want it, sort of thing. So
from a business point of view, from a Champion Data point of view, what's the makeup of the people that are part of the business? Are they all statisticians? Are they data geeks? You know, what type of people do you have working at Champion Data?
We have a lot of sports fans,
yep.
which is and we have a very low absenteeism, which is interesting. There's about 62 full-time staff. There's about 70 here at the moment because we're in the off-season and we've got contractors in doing other work. We've got an IT department and it's probably around 25 people. We've got a footy ops department that's probably got a dozen people in it. So there's editorial staff in there and there's also operational staff and there's also data scientists in there as well. We've got a TV graphics department, so we do all of the TV graphics for all of the broadcasters. So we've got a design and TV graphics department. We're also working in a number of other sports. So we've got a department that covers those sports and we've got a commercial department as well. So it's you know, grown and continued to grow. When I got involved in 99, there was 4 people and we're now 62. It's just continued to
sometimes because you're multifaceted in that you're publishing, putting out content. You're a service provider to broadcasters.
Yep.
You know, you're a statistics and high performance provider to the clubs and the
yep.
and the coaches. And then you're in that fan element
yep.
As well. So it's
yeah,
it's all coming off that core of the base of the stats, but it's got many functions coming out of it.
Absolutely. It's the, again, if we sort of go back to the guiding principles at the start, it was sort of like do it live, do it once, broadcast it to many. So it's a platform that allows us to service all of those clients, a digital client or a stadium or a broadcaster. And then we've just picked off things that we needed to. We got into broadcast because we felt that they were butchering the rendering of the data and they couldn't explain it.
Yep.
So we just decided that we should try and do that.
Yep.
And we built a graphics business out of that. So we sort of dipped in and out of things as we've found opportunities. And that's created its own challenges because what you then end up with is a pretty broad skill base. But that's essentially how we've done it. We sort of followed our nose on a few things, but
and so the genesis was in AFL, and you mentioned there other sports.
Yeah.
So how do you take that framework,
yes.
which is not AFL specific? It's just stats, gameplay.
Yes.
How do we analyze it? How have you picked that up and analyzed it, and replicated that model for other sports?
Sports, yeah, it's been pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. In, I think it was about 2002, we were the official data providers for the NRL, Rugby Union, Cricket Australia and the AFL.
Yep.
And we had one paying client, which was the AFL.
Yeah.
And the other three wanted to be like the AFL, but they wanted us to pay them.
Mm.
And it was post the tech boom and we'd run out of money. So we had to sort of shut those businesses or those licenses down. So we still capture that as information for those sports, but we don't capture to the same level.
Yep.
And the challenge now is because the market's become much more mature and sophisticated, there's incumbents in a lot of the things we do.
Yep.
We don't run into too many companies globally that do everything we do. So we've just got to be smart about when we go into something, not necessarily go in and say, here's an end-to-end thing because an end-to-end solution that can cover capture all the way to, fan engagement, all the way to TV broadcasts, because you're bumping into too many people that have already got roles.
Yep.
So you need to go in and go, we can do a data analytics piece or we can do a consulting piece or we can do a TV graphics bit, and then you look at sort of what you've built and you try and we're trying to grow out from there sort of thing. So that's sort of a bit of a focus for us now. Yeah,
and so the other thing with the off season, we spoke to Darren Birch recently around the AFLW, kicking into gear. Each year you produce the AFL perspectives, which is the Bible
yes.
for every commentator and
fantasy
and stat head that wants to pore over and know every single thing about every single player.
Yeah, do you buy one?
I'm not a big stat fantasy guy.
Yeah.
I've I think it's because it's a bit of I'm in it every day.
Yes,
that I don't, and you know I've got mates that spend probably 5 or 6 hours every Friday resetting their fantasy lineups, yes. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working in sport all the time. So
yes,
I mean I've always dabbled, and I do think I'm more more likely with the daily stuff with the less commitment, which yes. has been a development. Now you've got AFLW and had to analyse all the players
yes.
that have just maybe played one season,
yes.
or have never played. So yes. how do you tackle a project like that with a really light data set?
Yeah, it's a statistician's nightmare, isn't it? There's not enough data there. Look, I mean, I think it's been a great initiative by the AFL. The women's first season was incredibly well received, and we actually did capture to the same level as we did for men's,
yep.
Which was really important. So we're almost at ground zero, and I think we've just decided that we've got to start somewhere, so we'll start here. So we've knocked out the AFL Women's Prospectus as well. I've only just got hold of one, so I'll be interested to read it and see what's in there and how they've gone with it. But I think you're right to sort of flag a lot harder to do just because there's so many changes. The game's shorter, the scoring wasn't quite as high, and that was partly to do with the time of the game.
Yep.
One season, lots of players you don't know. Not like men's where we've sort of seen kids as 16-year-olds and captured data on them for 3 or 4 years. Different challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll get better over time, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and it's, I guess it's part of the strategy from an AFL point of view to, present a like product
yes.
that's, same as the men's.
Yes.
And so, fans will expecting the stats and they'll expect, things like the prospectus. So it is important in that sense.
Yeah. And look, we've been pretty committed to women's sports. We've been doing the netball for we did the netball for Australia and also New Zealand, and we've still got a relationship with them and been providing that for, I suspect it's 7 or 8 years we've been doing that for them. So, we're sort of not unfamiliar with doing other sports other than AFL, and also, women's sport as well as junior sport, and that the line that we've sort of drawn is at, I guess, the semi-professional level. So we tend to not go down into amateurs or school grade football or district
yep.
type stuff. We've sort of stayed at the level, the sort of where we sort of started. We used to describe it as we had to have someone that knew how to turn a computer on
yep.
and operate one.
And so that would be the signal that the meeting room that we've got booked here is almost ready to be taken. So this might present a good time to wrap up. So before I do, I've got the closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I probably do. My guess would be that it would have been a Carlton game at Princes Park, and I would have been with my two brothers.
Did you have to stand on some tin cans to see?
Snap. We collected the tin beer cans for my father to stand on. That's probably my strongest memory. I can't remember the game.
Yeah.
I remember the beer cans.
Yeah, I remember standing on similar beer cans at Vic yeah. Park early in the day. So
good fun.
It was good fun. It was good fun. Probably wouldn't take our kids to those environments these days if we had those, if the memories.
Yeah.
You've probably been to a few sports events. Is there a favourite or a go-to food that you have at a sports event?
I don't eat at games, but I'll tell you what I remember is French fries.
Yes.
Well, I think French fries only got to Australia when McDonald's got to Australia, but they had French fries at Waverley, and I remember buying French fries at Waverley with brown vinegar.
Yep.
I'd never experienced brown vinegar before, and it was cold, but there was something strangely satisfying about them. That's about all I can offer on the food front.
Yeah, yeah. What's the first
app? Not one for you?
No, I'm not a fan of the brown vinegar. No,
yeah, right.
No. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Do podcasts count as apps?
Podcasts definitely count. You're on a podcast. Yeah, of course they count.
Yeah,
what podcast app do you use? I'll ask you that.
I don't know.
So you're using the Apple.
I'm using the Apple one.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case. Instead of what podcast are you listening to? And you don't have to say this one. You can say others because I'm always interested in finding what other people are listening to.
Yeah, no. I've been listening to yours, Sean, and I've enjoyed that. I listen to a few different things, and not a lot of sports things. The sports stuff I listen to, I might listen to a bit of The Ringer, Bill Simmons.
Yep.
Occasionally, I don't listen to him all the time. I like Big Ideas, which is Radio National. Occasionally, they'll have something that's really interesting on it. They're not all for everyone.
And we'll wrap this one up.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And we're getting messages, so we're gonna get going. So, lastly, where can people find you? On the internet, how can they get in touch?
I'm on LinkedIn.
Yep.
I've been selective about who I let into my network on LinkedIn. But okay, if you send me a message
and say you heard the podcast, you'll get an accept.
Yeah. But if you send me the standard one, I probably won't link with you. But if you send me a message, I'll respond.
Okay. Otherwise, championdata.com.au.
Championdata.com.au.
Yep, we'll have all the details. Thank you very much for coming to the podcast. We better get out of this room so you can get the meeting room back.
Thanks for that.
No worries.
Want to start driving more revenue from digital? Go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com.
Thanks again to Tim Kelsey from Champion Data. If you want to know more about what Champion Data do, you can go to championdata.com. And find out more and have a look at what they do for the AFL point of view and the AFLW prospectus that we discussed for the AFL women's is now out now in all good bookstores and even the bad ones. So, if you check out Champion Data, you'll be able to find out where to get the prospectus. As I said, the AFL prospectus is a Bible for fantasy sports fans in AFL world. Tim and his team are doing some interesting stuff both in the AFL space, but then also branching into, as we discussed, different sports like golf and the like. So, if you're interested in what Champion Data are doing, please connect with Tim and find out more. Yeah, they're just doing some really interesting stuff with the Asian Golf Tour around the golf broadcast, and also doing some stuff around tennis. About seeing what data tennis potentially has. That's it for this episode. As this episode airs, I'm practically on the way back from Europe. So I'm going to preemptively thank all the people that I may have met recording this before Christmas, before the trip. And hopefully I've come back with a few more business cards and potentially a few more guests for the podcast, but also I may have also recorded some while I'm over there. So, as always, 2018, start of a new year. People are starting to look ahead at what the year may bring. And so if you're finding yourself looking at strategy, what you want to do from a digital point of view, where the commercialization of your digital kicks in, some of the things that we have been discussing in recent episodes, how do we integrate our sponsors, what are going to be the moves from a platform point of view, where's Facebook moving to? Is its play into media going to largely shift the sports rights space? I think that's going to be really interesting this year. Where's Snap going to evolve to, and where's the Snap ad product going to move to? I think that's going to be really interesting. But I think also the bit that really excites me is the campaign development. And it's why we've developed the Sports Geek campaigns model, sportsgeekcampaigns.com, where it is a sponsor campaign development service. We'll help you and your team build out your A-card and develop campaigns that they can take to market, and then they can simply sell them, and our team will do the execution for those campaigns. Our goal is to make sure that your digital team and your commercial team make more money. So if that's of interest to you, please get in touch. And there's all the ancillary benefits of more data, bigger audiences, more people viewing your content. There's a whole bunch of ancillary benefits of getting your sponsors involved on that side of the equation. And I'm more than happy to talk to more teams and leagues, rights holders that want to be a part of that. So you can always email me, Sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Or you can book a phone call, sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.